Hi everyone, and welcome to the Cushman & Wakefield Feel Good podcast. I'm Dominic Bouvet, and I lead our fantastic leisure business across Europe. And as a team, we are launching a series of insights which focus on how leisure and entertainment can change a place, and the impact it has on people's well-being. We are fortunate to have some of the world's most exciting leisure operators and owners joining us for this podcast series. Today's guest for episode 2 of our Feel Good podcast is Alan Mainwaring, who is Head of Events, Filming and Commercial Development at the Royal Parks. Hi Alan, how are you?
I'm very good, Tom. How are you?
Yeah, it's brilliant. Really good to have you on our podcast today. Firstly, Alan, I just want to be crystal clear with you. I want your job. Absolutely love the idea of doing what you're doing. You know, you've told me a bit about, you know, the bits that you do with Winter Wonderland and the various events. Absolutely brilliant. But maybe you could give our listeners a bit of a background to your career and how you came about working for the Royal Parks.
Sure. I mean, I actually went to university in Northumbria and studied sports development and sports science, and then ended up graduating in sports events management. And from there, I really kind of went into the charity sectors, worked for a company called the Muscular Dystrophy Campaign, developed a series of running events for them, which are now pretty well established. We've got some runs in Oxford, Cambridge, Durham and Exeter, which I'm really proud of. And then I guess the kind of the big break I kind of had was working at the Olympics, and I joined the Royal Parks in 2012, and it was really to kind of look after the MAL venue, which covers kind of 11 Olympic events, so the marathons, the cycling event, the triathlon. But also adjoined to that venue was Horse Guards Parade, which was very interesting because that was the main venue for beach volleyball.
which, I think I went actually.
Yeah. I think it was one of those kind of standout kind of venues from London 2012 Olympics. So it was amazing to be a part of that. Then I started working for the Royal Parks, mainly in their kind of sports events kind of department. So they have their flagship event, the Royal Parks Half Marathon, kind of work very, very closely on that. But also we work with a lot of partners across London on some of those big pan-London events. So the London Marathon starts in Greenwich Park, it finishes on the Mall in central London. And then we've got things like Ride London, which is a legacy event from 2012. That goes through quite a lot of our estate, finishes on the Mall, but also goes through Richmond Park, our biggest park, and you know, so beautiful out there. So, and yeah, I mean, I really, really loved kind of the organization, what it stands for. I love working in the outdoors as well. So really started to then work on some of the more cultural events that we host. So worked on Taste of London, Frieze Art Fair. Those events are kind of more held in Regent's Park. And then some of their kind of the much kind of bigger events as well. So we've got the British Summertime Concert Series. That's been running since 2012 in Hyde Park. And we also host Proms in the Park and Radio 2 Live concerts in September. And then obviously you mentioned Hyde Park Winter Wonderland. It's a pretty big event for us. Specialised.
Which is the biggest? Sorry, which is the biggest event that you run?
It's interesting. If you talk about attendance figures, it's definitely Hyde Park Winter Wonderland. Do have 3.6 million people attend over 45 days, which is pretty astronomical, really, if you start thinking about the amount of people that are coming to Hyde Park for that event. Each year we have to change the kind of, not the theming, but we have to add new attractions, different bits of content to make, you know, people want to come back. And that's a really important part of it.
You just label a piece there about how people, you know, get to these events, and how people get to the parks that you run and operate. Could you maybe just like, you know, the bits that you specialize in? I imagine, you know, it's all very well saying, you know, you're, you know, running the events, but actually what goes into that, you know, just for our listeners to kind of understand, because there's a lot more than probably, you know, than the average person knows or thinks about when you're actually having to look after a triathlon or a marathon or a beach volleyball, whatever it may be. So what do you actually do on a day-to-day yourself?
So me and my team, because the events are on our land, we chair them, we're responsible for them, but essentially we contract out to event organisers or agencies, come up in partnership with kind of creative content to kind of fit our specification. So if we looked at the concerts, for example, we'd go out to tender and we'd write a specification to fit our vision for the parks. And then event organisers would then bid to basically come up with a creative concept which fits our criteria. And then on those type of contracts, we generally have quite long-term contracts, because the way that we like to work with event organisers is over a long period, so that we can continuously improve the event, evolve it. But it's much more than just hosting an event, as you say. So the events that we host are in very high-profile locations. St. James's Park, Green Park, you know, our biggest stakeholder is the Queen. So, you know.
Does she come to any of these events?
Well, we're involved in state and ceremonial events as well. So Trooping the Colour, the Queen's Birthday Parade, the Queen's Diamond Jubilee. We also host, you know, royal weddings as well. So, you know, there is a close eye on the events that we deliver, and we have to deliver them to an exceptional standard. There's no falter on that. So, but generally, the way that events work in London on these big high profile events is in a multi-agency setting. So our biggest stakeholders and partners that we work with are Westminster City Council, the police, Transport for London, the London Fire Brigade. You know, everybody kind of chips in and gives advice in terms of their expertise. So that could be, you know, from Transport for London side, closing roads has an impact on everyday commuters in London. So we have to put in diversions. We have to change the transport network. The police will have their own concerns about security. So we have to put in hostile vehicle mitigation barriers. We have to put in additional security and stewards. Westminster City Council are our council, and we have a premises license with them. So that's the most important bit of, you know, our backbone for events. It sets all the conditions by which we have to host events. And that could be, what time do we stop serving alcohol? What time do we have to turn off the music? How often do we have to clean the streets after a concert? Yeah. You know, it's a 24-hour operation. So after a concert, you know, there's a night watch, which is then going out into Westminster streets and cleaning their streets.
Yeah, yeah.
Because, you know, those are the licensing conditions that we have to kind
so
of abide by.
It's often not just the venue or the park that you're dealing with. It's obviously everything that kind of surrounds that as well comes into play. Because that's the reason I say that is because, you know, a lot of our clients are landlords and owners of buildings, and kind of the bits that you've just mentioned and how they are looking to kind of revive some of these centres or actually put them in a more on-trend position for the customer are things that you're doing day to day. And I think that kind of that piece of how you actually operate your parks and how landlords actually operate their destinations, whether it be retail, leisure or both, or even mixed use destinations, is just a fundamental part. Because if you get the operation right, the likelihood is that your customers that are visiting will revisit going forward.
Yeah.
I'm sure that's the same thing for you. Like the revisit part of it is huge for you.
It's massive, yeah. I mean, we have to, as I said, continuously evolve the events and make sure that they have spectacular content or production. And that's why we have quite a lot of repeat customers to our concerts or Winter Wonderland. A lot of our events quite successful now. I think that's because we've kind of do this continuous improvement. We work very closely with residents and stakeholders around the park as well. They're critically important to kind of give us feedback. It's not just the park, it's kind of pan London and the other disruption that the events cause.
You've talked, you know, in great detail, which is fantastic, about when you're hosting events. Like, you know, and that obviously sounds like it's a regular, you know, you have a calendar that is filled throughout the year of events that you're, however small or large they are, that you're having to play, you know, or set up for the people that are coming and bought tickets. But kind of in between that, there are times when, you know, that the park is just a park and people will go and visit with family, with friends, maybe on a date, and they go and experience it for themselves. Like, Do you get much feedback, you know, from the people visiting your parks just on a day-to-day, whether it be residents or whether it be tourists, and actually how they feel when they enter these parks and kind of the reason why they're going there?
We've got some survey information. We do a survey every year by Ipsos Mori. 98% of people think our parks are exceptional and they have a fantastic experience within the parks. 77 million people attend the Royal Parks each year. So,
and how many parks is that?
There's 8 parks. It's a great pub quiz question. Do you want to have a go at answering them?
No.
So, yeah, we've got the 8 parks. 77 million people attend the parks each year. And I didn't know if I said this at the beginning, but the Royal Parks is now an independent charity. We used to be a government agency, and in 2017, we became a charity, and we have a board of trustees. And it's our responsibility to manage, you know, the 5,000 acres of historic parkland. We've got 170,000 trees. We've got 48 cafes and restaurants, 28 tennis courts, 4,000 wow. animal species, 68 miles of footpaths and horse rides, 21 lakes, 15 miles of rivers. And, you know, it's a spectacular place. And, you know, they're free to enter at all times, apart from when the gates are closed at night. And I think they are kind of world leading in terms of their horticulture, their landscape. The cost to run all 8 parks is £40 million per year. So 75% of that comes from self-generated income. Events and filming, which I cover, is 40% of that. And we also get a government grant, but some of our other income streams are from the cafes and the concessions yep. that we have in the park. We also get some income from rentals and licensing, and we also get some income from fundraising. Going back to your point about, you know, customer feedback, and I think I don't have any kind of data specific to that, but I mean, you know, I work in Hyde Park, and every single day I walk through the park and I see people playing informal sport. I see people playing tag rugby. I see someone taking their dog for a walk. I see someone, you know, cycling. I'm a cyclist. I commute to work every day. And, you know, I go through 3 parks, and I think it's the most kind of relaxed part of my cycle when I'm going through, you know, these green spaces. So I think, you know, from a well-being side, I see that on a day-to-day basis. I think what I get huge satisfaction from is the fact that the money that is raised from the events goes into park projects. So that can be as subtle as tarmacking a road in the inner circle of Regent's Park to yep. a £5 million super nursery, which supplies every single plant for all 8 Royal Parks. So for me, that's the kind of the satisfaction that I get out of the role.
Brilliant. So interesting. I absolutely love it. And I think it kind of goes back to what Cushman and Wakefield, you know, are thinking, is that if people are feeling good when they're visiting these locations, you know, there's a reason why they're going to stay, they're going to revisit. And I suppose for you, that's why you're able to always kind of evolve your events or the assets that you have within your parks, whether it's a cafe or a new sports area, whatever it may be. You know, we're always talking about social spaces. We think that is the new leisure. And actually, when we bring it back to kind of, I suppose, our world just for a second, which is retail destinations, leisure destinations, built up places, I suppose one of the key reasons for bringing you on to here and for our listeners to hear what you have to say is just, it's a completely different mindset to the way the world of property was maybe 10 years ago, maybe even 5 years ago. We're trying to encourage our clients to think outside the box, to make sure that they are thinking about how important it is for the customer to have, you know, social spaces, green spaces, you know, landscaped areas, because, you know, we know, and from what you've just told us, we know that actually that's very important to the customer. And all of this kind of comes back to the point around health and well-being. You know, if someone is visiting an area that it feels, you know, it's a place where they feel comfortable, and actually, you know, maybe their mindset is very different to where they maybe work or live, Now, that is a huge upside to a destination. And I suppose that's kind of what you're saying about your park.
I completely agree with you. You know, with the 5,000 acres of green space that we have, we're kind of uniquely positioned to bring unparalleled kind of physical and social well-being to visitors. I think, you know, as pace of life of London becomes increasingly frantic and is kind of quite crowded, I think parks play an increasingly important role in well-being and for local communities. And yeah, I mean, just to put into context some of the things that you're saying, you know, I organize everything from a small event to a major event, but when I walk through the park and see a charity walk or a charity run taking place, and you see, like, you know, the fulfillment that people are getting through that, it's a smile on my face when you see that happen.
Fantastic. No, that's fantastic to hear. And you know, in terms of when people enter the park, you know, is it straight away that you see that kind of that shift in their mentality? Obviously, like, you know, just thinking about your ones in particular, Hyde Park. You know, you've got people walking down Oxford Street, arguably the busiest retail high street in the world. They've got Marble Arch, then they hit Hyde Park, and that, you know, there must be a huge difference in the way people are when they're in the park as opposed to being, you know, on Oxford Street, which has only been a minute ago.
Yeah, I think you're completely right. I mean, you know, when I come off Oxford Street and then I kind of walk into the middle of Hyde Park, my office is right in the middle. I kind of breathe a sigh of relief and I'm kind of like, yes, thank goodness I'm back in the safe place. There is some stats actually which suggest that, you know, your heartbeat drops by 4 when you get into a green space and everything else in your body kind of relaxes. So
By 4 beats a minute.
Yeah.
Is that?
Yeah. So, you know, it just brings you down.
Amazing.
Yeah. So there's stats on that. And also I think, you know, if we're talking about some of the problems that London faces at the moment, it has a steady kind of growth in terms of the population. But in terms of tourism, I think that's meant to go up by 50% by 2030. So again, green spaces are going to be under a significant amount of pressure to absorb some of those day-to-day, you know,
demands
that people need to, you know, get away from some of those very crowded places and just take a walk or go for a run with a friend, take a dog for a walk, go out on a boat, on a pedalo. Mm-hmm. So those are the things that, you know, those are the challenges actually for the rural parks in the next, you know, 10, 20 years. And we need to try and find a way that welcomes everybody, but also, you know, manages it and makes sure everybody has a fantastic experience when they come in. It's interesting though, because I think events have so much more than an impact on kind of our own income. It also has a huge benefit to London. So Winter Wonderland has an economic boost of £195 million to London over the Christmas period. British Summertime Festival has an economic impact of £90 million over those 2 weeks. And those are people traveling to London, going to hotels, spending money in restaurants. So it's not just...
It's a big impact.
It's a huge impact because, you know, people are coming to London for these reasons. You know, we've got quite a lot of statistics which suggest that, you know, depending on what headline artists we put on, last year 65% of the people coming to our gigs were outside of London. So they were travelling, they were staying in hotels, they were spending money in restaurants, spending money on public transport. And that also has a massive impact on London's economy. So they're really important. They're really important. But there is a fine balance. There's obviously a fine balance for the amount of events we host. We've written a major event strategy, which caps the number of events that we can host each year. So it's actually just making the events as the best they can possibly be, whether that's through production or having unique customer experiences. We work with a lot of brands who have activations on site. And you have to be at the forefront of all of this because, you know, it's a very competitive market. If you're looking at concerts in particular, you know, we're competing with Wembley, Twickenham, the Olympic Stadium, Victoria Park. They all host concerts in an urban setting. So, you know, we look at every single aspect of the event in terms of delivery, but also production, and yeah, try our best to try and be ahead of the game.
Just going back to a couple of things you mentioned earlier, Alan, was one was nature and the other one was sport. Is there any kind of like indication of how that impacts people's well-being?
If we're looking at nature particularly, I mean, we found through our kind of studies that connecting with nature has a proven ability and has significant improvements to mental and social well-being. It also can contribute to a reduction in levels of anxiety, stress and depression. So
I imagine that's important in urban areas as well.
Well, I think, you know, me and you live in London, right? It's a busy, it's a pretty busy city. So, you know, being able to go out, take a walk at lunchtime through a green space and just get away from it all is really important. You know, my staff go out for runs at lunchtime and come back and, you know, they have a, you know, feeling fit and healthy and ready to go for the afternoon.
And the sport, you know, is a big part of it as well, isn't it?
Sport's a massive part of it. I mean, so the Royal Parks has informal sport and formal sport. So informal sport will be me and you going to the park, chucking a frisbee around, chucking a more probably a rugby ball, not a frisbee. But, you know, that's informal sport, and, you know, people can rock up and enjoy sport wherever they are, as long as they find a space in the park to do it. Formal sport at the Royal Parks is kind of booking pitches and you know, playing in a team. The Regent's Park is the largest outdoor sports area in central London. It's being used by over 400,000 people each year. That ranges from, you know, junior school kids playing softball, baseball, football, rugby, rounders, everything from that. And, you know, we've also worked with, you know, partners who invest in hybrid sports pitches. Yeah. So we're trying to increase the participant rates as well. So we've got hybrid pitches there now, which can be used all year round. We've got floodlights that can be used after dark. So as again, it's a continuous investment from the Royal Parks to making sure that sports and recreation can be benefited by all Londoners.
Alan, that's really interesting. I've loved speaking to you, and to be honest, learned so much about the Royal Parks and about London that I didn't know. I think, you know, for me, the key takeaways from this are, just from what I've heard from what you've said, is that feeling good and actually being kind of the social spaces that we have in our cities are so important. And the fact that the urban populations globally are increasing means that these social spaces, these green spaces, are just becoming more and more important. And, you know, I think that in a way, I think it's not just about those parks and those social areas, but it's also about the rest of these cities, how they can benefit and utilize the experience that you have in operating these areas, and how they can utilize them in their own urban areas, urban districts.
Yep.
Listen, it's been absolutely brilliant. I've loved speaking to you. Thanks for your time.
Cheers,
Alan.
Cheers. Thanks. Bye.